two topics today that I think we'll all find interesting. And I'm going to kick it off by turning it over to Dr. Locklear to introduce our first presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Andrea Gibson, who is the Executive Director of our Office of Institutional Research. Dr. Gibson came to this role a few years ago. She was a mathematics professor. She is a PhD in mathematics, and that certainly goes a long way to for her ability to crunch all these numbers and make sense of them. We're very lucky to have her. She's an outstanding leader of this department. And she's going to give you an overview of the office, what it does, and some information on our core performance indicators. Dr. Gibson.
You know, Dr. Locklear did a really good job introducing me, so I might let you stay and talk some more about me. So thank you all for letting me come and talk about one of the offices on our campus here. We are what I like to think of as a small but incredibly mighty office. So there are a total of five of us. Three of the people who report to me, Bob Stanley, Cassandra Wilmore, and Sylvia Zelch, their main responsibilities deal with our state reporting. And then we have our newest member, Christy Manello, who deals with most of our surveys. So together, along with my direction, we get it done, crunch all those numbers. So our mission statement is up there, but the way I like to think about it is we try to provide all the data about all things Daytona State to everybody. So that's really what we try to do. And our mission statement goes in depth into really the five different areas that we cover to uphold this mission. And so that's kind of how I'm going to outline everything that we do within this office. So the first one, most importantly, is making sure that we adhere to all federal and state reporting requirements. This is no easy feat. There is always a deadline. Right now, we're actually in the middle of two of them. And as soon as that one's over, another one crops up. So state and federal reporting happens four times a year. Like I said, right now, we are actually doing the end of our summer term, beginning of fall term data reporting. There are five different databases that we cover. It is student information that includes demographics and courses that they take and financial aid. There is personnel information, so that's all of our employees, and that has a special report that's kind of similar but different date ranges. It's our annual personnel reports. We also report on all of the facilities, and that literally includes everything from parking spaces to the number of bathrooms on this campus. We have an admissions database that goes over our bachelor admissions, and then the integrated database combines our student information with our faculty information to make sure that everything matches up. So I just kind of took one little picture just so you could get an idea of all the different things they ask for. These are our data elements. There are different record types, and they go into everything, last name, first name, age, all sorts of good stuff there. So on top of the standard state and federal reporting, we also have a whole series, and you can see we have our ducks in a row because this part is a lot here for state and federal reporting. We have a lot of standard reports that aren't part of database submissions, but we have to do them every single year. And so, for instance, one of them is our grad rate survey. Dr. DeQuino and I don't want to say suffer through, but we gladly do the FTE enrollment projections three times a year. We do industry certifications. NRS for adult education. But then over here, this is what I call the fun column. These are ones that we just get emails because something happened federal or state-wise and they need to gather some information. And a lot of times this ends up turning into something that we collect either every year or it ends up in our database submissions. But this includes the reports that you guys often hear about, like our textbook affordability. We do a big one on how our baccalaureate programs do. concurrent joint use. So that's the buildings that us as well as other schools use on this campus. And so these grow every single year. Last year, like I said, these are a lot. There were 131 different reports outside of the state database submissions that required some level of college participation. So it's not, I did not do 131 reports, but they definitely went out to all different areas. So it's the states and the federal reporting agencies definitely know everything that we are reporting here. So that was the first way. The second way is definitely our surveys. And so we try to be, again, that main area for either filling out data that goes to surveys or giving surveys to get data. Again, I just did a quick rundown, and I think sometimes I don't even know because other people handle this, of how many things we actually did. So I just went back to last fall and last spring and wrote down all the big ones. You're going to see some of them where we just answer questions about Daytona State. So one that you guys are probably familiar with is that U.S. News Best Online Bachelor's Program. So we help soon-to-be Dr. Cohen get all the data for that and get that turned in every year. And then we do a couple other big ones. The Survey of Entering Student Engagement is a partner to this one called the CESE, the Community College Survey of Student Engagement. We did those in part for the Title III project that we have going on now. The ad hoc requests are when people come to us to do smaller surveys, and these can be anything. We did one recently that went out to the community that was assessing the needs of a pharmacy program. So a lot of times before we do we need to add this program, we go and ask the community, is there a need for this program? There are surveys that are embedded into courses. So our SLS 1122 course, the Managing Your Success, we created one that measures financial literacy at the beginning and the end of the semester that they give out. Again, Dr. Jaquino and I, we sent out one to students that talked about their enrollment plan. So when COVID was, who knows what was going to happen, we sent out an email to students to kind of find out, how comfortable are you coming back? How do you want to take your classes? What do you think you're going to do? So really, really great. One of them up here is this basic needs survey is actually one that came out many, many, many years ago under Farooq Husseini's leadership. So I distinctly remember it was, I don't know why I remember this, but it was one of the, where we were at the ATC campus that we first did this one. And it's a survey that we first partnered with another governing body. They're called Real College. And they were part of a grant, and we kind of snuck in, and we were able to do it for a couple years. But it measures food and housing insecurity and homelessness of students. And so their grant actually expired. And what happened was we said, well, we still want to participate. And they said, that's great. It would be approximately $11,000 to administer that survey. So we went from free to $11,000. And so they came back and said, we get it. You can apply for a scholarship, which we didn't receive, but we did apply for it. And then finally they said, look, all of these questions are open source questions. So if you go to the back page of the reports that we've been giving you, we've got the source for every single one of our questions, and you can go get those questions yourself and give your own survey. And we said, that sounds better than $11,000. And so this past year, we actually created a very similar survey and administered that. It was sent to over 11,000 students last fall. There's a lot that it measures, and I believe we've done some shorter presentations about this at We Royal We, because I believe Dr. Locklear would have done that presentation for you. But this is one of my favorite slides. It does measure three things, that food insecurity, the housing insecurity, and the homelessness. And it bases it on a series of questions, which now we do all of these calculations and see what we come up with. And it's very interesting. We did miss one year there, so we have 2016, 18, 19, and 20. And you can see exactly how this is going. But a lot of it is because of the things that happened after that first year and we got those results. And so if you remember, Mrs. Husseini said, I don't want any homeless students on this campus by, I forget the year, the magic year. Oh, I thought someone was going to help me out. She had a magic year. I'm sure we are getting to it, but that was a
probably the next year.
Yes, thank you. I knew it was right there. Thank you so much. But a lot of it is because of the great things that happened. So that first year we said, oh, man, right? That's bad. So 73% of our students are experiencing some type of food insecurity. And so now we've got things like our food pantry and other things that we've set up, and now we're getting down there. The housing insecurity, it's a broad range of questions that comes up with a score. So it could be anything from I spent one night on a friend's couch to I literally am sleeping in my car. I have nowhere to go. And so that popped up. I have a feeling that's probably COVID related. And then our homelessness, thankfully, is getting down there as well. So we really like this survey. It was a great initiative that came through you all. So besides surveys and the state and federal reporting, we also publish different reports. One of them is our most popular, Fast Facts. So we are the source of that quote-unquote main data, the stuff that's always asked for about Daytona State. Just gave you a little shot there of last year. So it has headcount, it has FTE, it has financial aid information, graduate information, special category information, race and ethnicity. So we put that together, and then thankfully we have marketing, which makes it look really nice. And then normally we would do a really big presentation about this core performance indicators. That's also going to be on our website very soon. And this is goes into, again, a lot of the same things that are on the Fast Facts, but a little bit deeper. So I'm going to go into some of those a little bit deeper. So one of the first things that we track is always going to be our enrollment. And so in this case, we have our annual full-time equivalent. And is everyone familiar with what FTE means for a student? I assume so, but I didn't want to make that mistake. So this is our FTE. The dark blue bars are our college credit total. So that excludes our adult education and our continuing workforce education. And then the lighter blue, obviously the taller bar every time, has those added back in. And then we also have our upper division and our adult ed just broken out. So upper division is part of that dark blue. And then the adult ed is also part of that light blue. But we always look at our enrollment here. And then I like to look at the enrollment and try to figure out some of the trends in other ways. So another big one is our dual enrollment population. So we can see here that our dual enrollment headcount did increase this past year, about 6%. And I love this one right here. I think this one's fascinating. So we know that often during graduation, I think this is one of the high points of graduation, where Dr. Labasso gets to ask the high school students to stand up if they've earned their AA or their AS degree before they graduated from high school. And so you can see that this number is growing here. We were up to 288 this past year, which was a whopping 16%. Increase over the previous number. So being able to dig into some of these special categories is always really neat. Another one is our headcount and FTE by instructional method. So our courses are broken down into face-to-face, where they meet solely in the classroom, hybrid, where they can meet in the classroom as well as in the online arena, and then our online, which would meet solely online. And I know you guys are looking at that going, what happened that last year? I'm sure the obvious answer is COVID happened that last year. So this looks at how many students took at least one type of those courses. So there is going to be some distinct headcount duplication within each type, because students can take a face-to-face and online, a hybrid at the same time. But look at that amazing increase in our online versus obviously our face-to-face went way down. So that was obviously due to COVID. And this just talks about how big the increase was. So a 49% increase in the number of students taking at least one online class. FTE also increased by nearly that same amount. And then I like this one. We measure this every year. So last year, 90.5% of our students took at least either one hybrid or online class. The previous year, it was 78.4%, and that was our highest number. So we had nearly a 12% increase, again, because of COVID, of students switching into that online arena. So also within the core performance indicators are our AA graduate transfer rates. So this is something that the state takes all of our data and then looks into National Clearinghouse data to determine where our students are going. So the most recent year are 18-19 graduates, and they look to see where they were in 19-20. And they look a bunch of different places. So they look within the state university system, within private colleges in Florida, our Florida college system, which obviously we're part of, but I pulled us out. So DSC is over here in its own. And then there's always going to be a group of students that just go outside of Florida or enter into the workforce that won't be found. The nice thing that I like about this graph, pretty consistent overall, but look what's happening as I think we get more and more bachelor's degrees, more and more students are staying at Daytona State and getting that bachelor degree. So that was a nice surprise there.
It's a great trend, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it. Yep. So you can see 18.3% enrolled in our baccalaureate programs, which is great. And I assume it's just going to keep going up. Two more areas.
Can we survey the ones that go to another Florida college system institution? So not the state university or not a private, but I'm just curious why we would lose to another Florida college system. Maybe we don't have the degree. That's an easy one.
Right.
It'd be good to know.
And yeah.
Even more of them.
This data comes directly from the state, so I'm going to have to remind myself if it's student-level data. If it's student-level data and I know who the students are, we could definitely go back into the DSC system to see if we have some type of personal email and get that survey out. So I can definitely look in to see if that is doable. Remind myself. So we will definitely follow up on that one. I'm going to remember what that circle and star means later. All right. So our fourth area is going to be our ad hoc and standard reporting. So we get a lot of phone calls. I don't know if you guys watch Grey's Anatomy, but they refer to your person. Everybody has their person. And I think within IR, there are people all over this campus that have their IR person that they call up and they say, hey, I need this from you. I need graduations. I need course success rates. I need to know the enrollment in my courses right now. I need you to send something to the clearinghouse, and this is the list of students that I want to go there. Sometimes just data checks. So we send a lot of reports. Birth dates are really easy to misenter. So, right, we go, oh, I was born 1205, and then you go, oh, it's 2021, and you type in 2021. And then we run a report, and we find a person who's like 0.3 years old, and we go, I don't think that's right. So we do a lot of data checks as well on some common errors. My favorite, and shout out to my person who's sitting over there, we have something that I affectionately call the Louie Report. He's trying to be quiet back there, but Louie is my best friend at the start of every semester. This is an example of just one page of the Louie report. What this does is it goes in by hour and tells me how many students are taking either a hybrid course or a face-to-face course and are going to be on that campus at that time. And so this is actually fall 21 for the Daytona students. So I was looking, oh, I was looking at, we were going to be 1 o'clock on a Thursday, so there's approximately 210 students that should be taking a class right now. But Louie uses this report to help with the campus safety staffing. So I like that we affect all areas, and this is something, we do this for every single campus, and we do it at the start of every single semester to help out. So I like some of our ad hoc requests. Dr. Labasso is a big fan of our ad hoc requests, and his hypotheses is we discuss something, and then we go through the data and kind of discover what happens. So we like those. And then the last way, like I said at the beginning, is we really try to be the main data source for Daytona State College. So we work with a lot of different departments to get them that data. So shout out to my second half here, Dr. Carla Moore. We do all of our assessment day data every year. We actually had one of the meetings this morning. So we go through 29 different academic areas, and we provide all sorts of data about how their students are doing in classes, what their student makeup is, their graduation, how long it's taking their students to graduate. If it's a short program, we look at the persistence rate. Are they staying from semester to semester? If it's a longer program, we look at the retention rate. Are they staying year to year? We look at graduation rates. We kind of try to model what the state monitors on us as well. And so I have kind of a smaller chart here for our dental hygiene program, but you can see this is an example of the retention rates. So we look at first how many people stayed within that program, but then further in that last column, how many people either stayed in that program or changed into one of our other programs. So if they're not going to stay in the program, that's fine, right? I changed my major at the beginning of my junior year. Don't do that. It was very difficult to become a math major at the beginning of my junior year after failing miserably in business, but that's fine. So I had to do that. But we want you to stay at that school. So we like to monitor both of those things. So this past year, you can see 84% stayed in that program, 4% went on to somewhere else in Daytona State. And then one of the last big ones that we do, you guys see every April in that particular board workshop, are the annual performance targets that the state gives us, basically what performance funding is based on. So we work with state data that we're given for a bunch of these really strategic priority 1 and 2. That's all the new state data for performance funding. But then we also have some that we monitor in-house. And then I work with a lot of the other areas on campus to get some more of that data. And so we look at all these different things and try to just make sure we get that complete picture of Daytona State College and what's happening. So I probably talked way too fast. I apologize. I was watching my clock because I know I've got Chris staring at me over here going, I've got a presentation too. So any other questions besides our great survey one?
Any questions? Right, I think a future topic for us, the basic needs one, you saw that great drop and then it plateaus. If we're really going to move the needle again, we need to think how. And the other thing is, since you're doing the survey now, we might be able to tease out, as you pointed out, you know, the housing insecurity could mean a lot of different things.
Correct.
Some all bad, but some a lot worse than others.
Correct.
And we might want to tease out.
Yeah, I can actually share. I'll share it with Lynn because we do have the results of the full survey that does go through the categories. So I can give that to you as a step one. And then I'm sure our retention committee, I think, is where it kind of was born originally or kind of inherited it and then talks about it the most. We can definitely bring it to them and say, where do we go from here? Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
So next up, topic two. Chris is going to introduce our architects who are going to give us a presentation on the new building at the Deltona campus.
Thank you. I have to give Lynn a second here to cue up the presentation, but yeah, this is a fun one. We've actually had this project on our books for about 4 years now. It's been in our capital project request that goes out every year that you guys review and submit. So we've had this one. Deltona is our campus that has one building on it. So we're really excited to finally be moving forward with our second building. and it's going to be primarily for the nursing program. After 4 years of it being submitted to the state, we had some trickle funding that came in slowly over the years. About 2 years ago, we went out for an architectural solicitation. We were able to get Chinkle Schultz for as the architect. Then the funding stopped again, and so we kind of put the project on hold. So it kind of sat there for a year and a half, 2 years. And then last year, we were fortunate enough to get the majority. We're just shy a little bit here for the rest of the funding for the project. So we re-engaged with Chinkle Schultz. They are the architects that did our Building 3 on our Palm Coast campus. They've actually done several projects with us. But Building 3, which is where we have our board meetings every once in a while over there, it's a great building. And this building is kind of modeled off of that one almost as a prototype of where this building is going, because it's very similar square footage wise. It's a simple building, but it handles our issues that we have eloquently as far as the design goes. So, you know, we were able to start building off of that as like the potential design. So what we did is when we re-engaged them, we brought back in some of the users, and we started having our meetings as far as programming to figure out, you know, what the need was going to be, what classrooms would need to be in there. So now we're finally at the point that we've got the building location pretty much hammered out. That's been reviewed by our FPAC committee through a couple meetings. They've done a presentation with them as well. And we're at the point now that we have the location. We know where the building's going to be going. We know basically what's going to be going in it. Don't know what it's going to look like yet. They're going to be working on that one. We're at a point that we'd love you to take a look at it, and we welcome any kind of questions or comments that you might have. They're the right people to be asking, and now's the right time. So what we're going to do is we're going to let them do their presentation, and then we're going to circle back around in a couple months when the building becomes refined, and we'll let them represent back to you where we are with it aesthetically and, you know, those type of things. So with that, I will introduce our team from Chinkle Schultz and let them take it over. There is a pointer.
So good afternoon. I'm Patrick Rao with Chinkle Schultz. I'm the project manager and educational planner at our firm. And I have Ekta Desai. She's a partner with Chinkle Schultz, and Michelle Chandler as well is with us from Chinkle Schultz. What we have on the screen is kind of an overall agenda, and I won't be fairly brief. We want to talk about design schedule, about kind of where we are, snapshot in the whole process. We'll give an update on the programming. Like Chris mentioned, we've met with stakeholders and Dr. Locklear and everybody else to kind of formulate the overall program, and we've looked at some adjacency kind of concept diagrams, not floor plans, but actually just kind of concept plans. And then we'll talk about site massing, site planning a little bit, and then also touch on another part of the project, potentially, which is a renovation over at Fothey Hall. And if you have any questions, please feel free to speak up. This just shows an overall snapshot of the schedule we are right now. Like Chris mentioned, we're sort of at the tail end of programming and sort of bleeding into schematic design. So after this meeting, hopefully we can start to formulate a little more of the exterior, what it's actually going to look like. And we're also going to start focusing on things like geotech reports, site surveys, all those things that technically we need to follow through with and make sure we're staying on track. Ultimately, we're going to be opening in fall of 2023, so we have time for move-in for the owners, testing and balancing, and all those other things that we need to do as part of construction also. But that's kind of where we are right now on the overall schedule. I know this is hard to see on the screen, but on the handouts, we do have this program document. It's sort of a living document, so as we're working through program, we're constantly updating and getting feedback. We got some feedback at the FPAC meeting a couple weeks ago about the overall program. Primarily, it's going to be dedicated towards the nursing program. We also have some sonography labs. We also have machining lab, CNC and manual machining lab programs part of the campus as well, and also medical lab technician, which is another part of the program which we've incorporated. In addition to that, there are also a campus store like we have at Building 3 in Palm Coast, and also a student lounge space, again, like we have in Building 3 at Palm Coast. This shows the sort of overall concept diagram. And again, it's not to say this is the floor plan. This is more of a bubble diagram, talk about adjacencies and start to inform a little bit about the overall design and what kind of components are going to be incorporated into the site here. The one image on the left here, this would be the first floor, the ground floor plan. Again, you can see the student lounge, bookstore area. These are sort of those social spaces. If you've been in the Building 3 at Palm Coast, the idea is to recreate some feel similar to that, maybe be a little more open, but have some of those social spaces that open up and connect to the rest of the campus. We also have two large nursing simulation bays, one on the first, one on the second floor, a related classroom that goes along with that. There is an office suite to support admin offices and other offices for the medical programs. And then on the back side of the property, or the back side of the building, there is a machining lab, two machining labs, classrooms, and support spaces to go along with that. On the second floor, it stacks. We have the sonography on the second floor, medical lab technician, and then we added an additional science lab on the second floor per our meeting with the FPAC. So we have both biology and chemistry up on the second floor of the overall plan there. So this just gives you sort of a rundown or breakdown of the overall program that we're kind of wrestling with right now. Any comments on this part before I go on a little further? Good. Okay. And then the other thing we've done is just a snapshot of kind of the need requirements for all of the stakeholders. So we've met with Dr. Locklear and Jerry and everybody else and Colin to get their feedback on how they're going to use these spaces. So we've really gone into some pretty detailed analysis about all of the equipment that goes into every space, how the space is going to be used, you know, the size of the doors. All those detail are things that we're working through with the individual stakeholders to really make sure we get all the information we need up front so we can coordinate things early on, and we have plenty of time to get the project well coordinated. So this shows a typical organization of the simulation room with four medical simulation stations. Each one has a unique kind of character about how they operate and how they're utilized. There's also an office that's located sort of central to this suite as well. And then there's prep spaces, prep rooms for storage and things like that that are all tied to those rooms. This shows the overall space layout for the sonography diagnostics. And again, the goal is to work with all the stakeholders and people who are using the space and make sure we're accommodating all of the infrastructure we need even early on in this programming phase of work. And then the medical lab technician space, again, it's a very similar size area. Everything is very modular, which makes it easy for us to kind of switch in and out programs. But generally speaking, it's going to be set up very similar to sonography. The infrastructure is a little different here. There's a little more technology and electronics that go into the space.
So as the second building being realized on this campus, we knew the siting of the building was very, very important. So we paid very close attention to the Prosser Master Plan, which was what was, I think, finalized over the course of the last 2 years. So what you're looking at here is actually what we're proposing, which we believe is a great way to create some synergies between Fathi Hall and the new building. One of the things that you can see here per the Prosser Master Plan is the expanded parking just east of the existing parking area. This ring road that you see that links that entire parking area with this existing parking area along Providence is very critical and actually ended up being a pinch point that helped negotiate the siding of the building. We have modified retention. This is actually existing retention, which we're actually modifying, but also going to use this bermed area along Providence to allow more visibility to the building from Providence Road. So by siding the building parallel to Fathi Hall, we were able to create a community courtyard that not only allowed ease of access from both parking lots, but also allows an opportunity to create a very civic presence along Providence Road. And also it gives great emphasis to this edge if we're able to even out the berming to allow for the additional retention. The other thing it does, as Patrick mentioned, is the kind of social spaces that are a part of the program, it situates them adjacent to the parking and also adjacent to the lobby space of Fathi Hall. So there will become a natural kind of cross-section and engagement that we hope will occur in the way that we design those spaces to also not only engage with the interior, but to engage with this connective tissue or this exterior space that's happening out front. This was a massing study just to get a sense of scale. We have quite a dramatic grade change at this site. From the front door of Fathi Hall towards Providence Road, there's about a 6-foot grade differential, which by orienting the building parallel, it helped us mitigate some of that delta. The other thing it does is, as I mentioned, there's a very clear distinction as to where the front door is from parking, but also there's a clear sense of identity that we can create along Providence, which we don't currently have with the siting of, with the front door location at the existing Foddy Hall building. You can also see that because of the existing topography here, this will be able to sit a little bit higher than Foddy Hall, so we see that as a great architectural opportunity as well. And this is kind of zooming in a little bit closer into what you see here in orange. Those are those social spaces that we mentioned before. This is just a stacking adjacency diagram, but the intent would be to really create indoor-outdoor connections that would really allow this the space to be utilized not just before class, but after class and in between classes for that commuter student base. This is another look. Kind of standing just above Providence and kind of hovering above Foddy Hall. This is the edge that you would see from the main road. One of the suggestions made during the FPAC meeting was to, instead of providing so much verticality in the machining lab, actually utilizing the second floor for future science classrooms, because with this being the second building for potentially many years to come, getting the most kind of economy out of the building footprint as possible.
The other part of this project that we kind of worked through working with Chris and facilities group was acknowledging that there's an existing nursing-like program right now in Foddy Hall over on the south corner of that building. So once we build the new building, which is going to have sort of all this new state-of-the-art nursing program spaces, the question was, well, what do we do with the existing nursing lab? And there's an opportunity there to create something different. We had talked about the need potentially for HVAC construction lab as part of this campus. It's a very large requirement as far as square footage of space. So rather than trying to get that into the new building, we did a quick study that analyzed, is it possible to utilize the existing nursing lab, renovate that, and turn this into a HVAC construction lab program for the Deltona campus. We did an analysis that looked at overlaying structural columns, foundations, and also looked at existing plumbing to really minimize how much actual work and construction we'd have to do to convert this space. And we ended up with was a way of keeping keeping these consistent structural columns and beams in place, and also keeping the main risers and water trace areas in place, and converting this into a HVAC construction lab with a related classroom adjacent to it that had a lot of transparency between the two spaces. So this was, we actually walked through the HVAC construction lab at ATC campus. This would be sort of a little bit of a smaller version of that. The square footage isn't quite the same, but the idea is to create some of the same spaces about the organization and also incorporate some of the notes we heard during the ATC walkthrough. So for example, we talked to an instructor at this program at that campus, and he said, you know, We have their classroom space, but in that configuration at ATC, it's actually embedded in the overall space. And he goes, it doesn't work very well because now it's like right in the middle of the open of all the work, and it's hard for me to use this as an instructional area. So we took some of that feedback, for example, and incorporated this as now you have a dedicated related classroom that will connect to this high bay HVAC construction space. There's also some existing overhead bay doors, actually, that are already in place. If you've been to the backside of this building, so the idea is we can actually incorporate a lot of that and really minimize the amount of construction that we have to do to convert this into a new HVAC construction lab. So this is something that's actually, this is additional above and beyond our contract just for Deltona. So we've issued an ad service, the facilities to accommodate this. But we did do a study to see, is it feasible? And it certainly is feasible for us to do. Any questions on that part? And that was pretty much it. So, any questions?
Chris, did you get, just curious, that last piece of this, was there in that study, was there a cost estimate?
No, we haven't got there yet. So, like Patrick mentioned, it's not really part of this project.
No, I get it, yeah. But it's pretty solid idea. Mm-hmm.
Right. We're trying to think forward a little bit just to make sure, you know, that space will be vacant as soon as this building is ready. So the idea is that we start thinking about how that can work. And we know that the HVAC is definitely a potential for that one because of the need that's out there in the market right now. So it was good that they did this quick study just kind of on their own to see about that feasibility, but the next step would be, you know, engaging and going into what that cost would be. On a separate note, at a conference, I talked to Train, and Train will supply, you know, a lot of the actual equipment that needs to be there, because they're looking for people to come and fill the market that they don't have right now. So, you know, I think there's some opportunities that are there. We would, of course, you know, figure out what that exact equipment would be, what the class size would be. But it's great that they kind of, we've looked at that and hopefully have a direction. Funding for this is not included at all either. So we're going to have to take a look at that, but I'll bring that back to you guys as a group once we get to that point.
Yeah, Chris, looking at it, are we going to have to rebid or do anything before we can even start doing something like this? Because it's a separate entity.
The answer is yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Rebid for contractor for...
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, and that's the thing too, we're, I'll be coming to you in this board meeting with the contractor. So what we're trying to do is get, a CM involved as early in the process as we can, because they do help us keep that budget, you know, manageable. And so we're trying to bring them in as early as possible, but on that one as well, this is not included. You know, so all these are ad services, you know, and that's the thing, you know, so we're going to get proposals for that, and then we would go out. So, it, you know, there is economy of scale that is there sometimes, you know, but we still need to follow our procurement stuff. But for right now, it's just, it was kind of a little look forward on this piece, and there is the machining, which kind of runs to, you know, it's not the same program, but it's very similar. And right now, ATC has those two, you know, class offerings there. You can do machining as well as HVAC at ATC. So this would be in addition to those programs. And I know we'd be involved with Amy on figuring out what the need would be as far as student load and all that kind of stuff. Shinkle Schultz did go with us. We did a site visit out at ATC, took a look at what we had there. Most likely both of those programs for this one would be smaller. But we definitely want to make sure we have expandability there if the need arises. I think that campus is one of our up-and-coming campuses. You know, we've got one building. This will be two. That master plan just got, you know, Prosser did that master plan. So we're looking at, you know, as almost a suburb now of Orlando, there's a lot of potential growth that's out there for Deltona.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is, because you had – like a small nursing facility there that won't be needed because you have a new building. Now, are we going to just, can we incorporate removing the nursing program since you have a new one? And once you do that, do you have to rebid, or can you contract to make that new facility or to redesign the facility?
Yeah, and I think we do. We do need to rebid because the CIP that was approved by the state is very concise on the scope of work that's included with the funding that goes for this project. Even though it's nursing, I mean, you're right, it's the nursing is moving over. This is not, they don't include funding for you to reuse other spaces. That would have to be almost like a separate project that we would put in. But yeah, that's the funding structure for this project did not include that.
Did not include removing the nursing program from there over?
It does as far as the moving,
yeah,
but not the repurposing of the space.
Okay.
Yeah, the offices. I noticed there's an office in virtually every lab, in the nursing labs. And are they dedicated offices, or are they like hot spots for whoever is in the lab at that time, or just?
Yeah, I think either faculty or the faculty members that operate the SIMS, because we have one person assigned that's at the control panel for the simulators, and in those SIM rooms, I think that's what that's for.
I think that that you're able to use the model from Palm Coast to the Deltona is helping us a lot. It's expediency. My concern to you, Chris, have we kept in communication with Deltona, the city of Deltona, to make them aware of the building since we're sharing?
That's a great question. We haven't really, we're really schematic right now. And in fact, just now locating the building itself, I think that's a great idea. They are our neighbor there. I think we would. Now, the consideration of the orientation of the building to that city hall that's there was part of the consideration when they were doing the site planning and orientation of the building. So, but yeah, we have not reached out to them yet, but that I think would be a great idea.
Only.
Yeah.
Not to go get input, but just this information.
To let them know. Yeah.
Know that it's coming, and I think that when the construction starts, there'll be less questions and probably less anxiety.
It's a great idea, yeah.
Just get on top of it first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we might even be able to do a little presentation to them as well, you know, so they understand. Yeah.
They're excited about the change because it's really helping the city of Deltona.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, very good, yeah.
Chris, on looking at the proximity from Deltona's campus to Seminole State, what do you have any idea on how many miles apart we are from each other?
I don't. I do know where you're talking about there. I'd have to map it.
Yeah, because when you said about, you know, the suburb of Orlando, I definitely agree with that, and of course the growth and looking at what Advent's looking to do out that way now, and other hospitals are also, you know, looking to expand out that way. Just trying to think, you know, in terms of is this, because I don't know what Seminole State offers in the way of nursing programs and of that nature. So is this possible that we could be attracting students that we don't have today from that area, and do we have enough space?
Can you pull your mic forward?
Yes, sorry.
Turn on. Thank you, Lynn. I support the whole notion. I'm just a little concerned that it might not be large enough. Mm. You know, I understand Palm Coast and the size of Palm Coast. But the population in Deltona and surrounding is, I just feel like we might get there. Now, have you done all that research? I mean, do we know, based on population percentage and what the take rate usually is of nursing, and since we had all this statistical information here reporting, I'm just curious if it's, it feels to me like we're going to outgrow it in a hurry.
And just one thing to clarify, I mean, we did start with Palm Coast as sort of that planning model. It has expanded. It's not going to be the exact same size as Building 3 in Palm Coast. So this is the building did kind of grow some additional bays to accommodate that. If you're comparing it apples to apples, it is
but
bigger.
That's a great question. I mean, future growth is always one of those things that we have to think about. And when we do the master plan, which we've got one that's going to be coming up here this next year, we'll be readdressing master planning. That thought process, population growth, all comes into play when we do the master planning for future building. When we go to the state for a request for construction funding, it's based on our educational plant survey, where they look at a survey of need and they look at every single campus, and it takes into account a lot of different pieces and parts that comes up with what that need is for a specific campus. So when we submit it to the state, we include that survey, and everything has to be justified as far as any spaces that go in there, labs, classrooms, associated spaces. So they all have to be justified, and the cost is the amount that the state's willing to fund a project is based on that survey. You can go over it, but they won't give you any more money for it. So this, when we did this original request, the survey at that time showed the gross square footage that's in this building now. Now again, that was 4 years ago. And things change, you know, things change, but that's how when we request funding, it's based on that survey of need for each specific campus.
How difficult is it to update the survey?
You can definitely do that. That's part of it. You can do what they call a spot survey, and now that takes into account today, and you can go in and do a spot survey and then do an additional request. It's been really tough getting the funding for this one from the first request, but you can do that. You can actually ask for a spot survey, especially if you know the dynamics changed in that area.
Yeah.
Maybe worth doing. I think we'd want to oversure the question about what the Seminole State offer nearby, and then how many nursing students could we handle in this configuration. So if we build it as is, what's the throughput? Because I'm sure you can get the hospitals out there to say, you know, they would like more throughput. Dr. Lovasa?
Good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, that building is larger than Flagler. And I believe, Amy, correct me if I'm wrong, that this nursing capacity would be 90 to 120 students?
Yes. Per year?
Yes.
Yeah, Tom, she said that's correct.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a, you know, I don't know what percentage that is off the top of my head, but it's a pretty good percentage of what would represent the overall nursing program. And we do talk, we are talking to the hospitals regularly regarding their ability to also accommodate us for clinical space. It's always evolving, and, you know, we don't know what tomorrow will bring on it, but we do think that this will, have us in good shape for several years moving forward. Because the thing to remember too, when we do our surveys of need, the advent of online learning has really changed the pressure on classroom buildings. So I think and that's probably going to continue to grow. So I think that kind of offsets a little bit on the physical space that we would, say, 15, 20 years ago might need. So it's a great question.
Other questions?
You know, just to follow up on what you said about that, the survey or whatever, this is something we might think about in our legislative priorities when we go before the folks in Tallahassee. You know, yes, we planned for this. The survey came out a little bit different, and we'd like to look at getting the extra funds if we need to increase because of the population or whatever. So this is something that we might need to see if we want to address in our legislative priorities. But that's for the board meeting.
I don't want my comments to be construed as not in support, very much in support, just maybe in support of something larger. That would be all I would say.
That's a great comment. And I think clearly the you heard that many different ways around the table. So probably at a future board meeting, if you guys could come back and just talk a little bit more about what our options are and how comfortable you are that this meets the need, or is it worth fighting for four years. And that was the same, and it's the same in a lot of state-funded institutions. You do something, and then by the time you get the funding for the building, you know, 4 or 5 years have passed. And, I mean, look at the growth of Orlando in 4 or 5 years. So, it's probably worth coming back. But in general, everybody, it's a great concept, well-needed. Building design and concept looks nice, and excited to see the funding, the original funding, start to be almost completed. So, great. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, with that, we will take a 6-minute recess and start right up at 2:00. So thanks so much.